Good Gabs, sponsored by SkillSkin, a nonprofit organization empowering individuals with disabilities through employment. We've had a lot of amazing organizations on this podcast. I've been blown away so many weeks in a row. As you know, the feedback from you, you know, we've just learned a lot. But today, it's a little special day. It's one of my favorite organizations to support. The impact that they're making is incredible. It's Embrace Washington today. We have one of the founders, Aileen Alexander, here, and also the new executive director. It's Terry Crafts. Terry, Aileen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What's happening right now? We just came off of the big fundraiser, Flannel Ball. I got to be there. It was awesome. It was great night, and just seeing the impact of, you know, what the organization's doing. You know, what else is happening? What's on the horizon?
Well, I would jump in and say one of the things that we announced at the ball that we're very enthusiastic about is our new program that we have entitled HALO. So HALO is an acronym that stands for Healthcare Assistance for Little Ones. So the HALO program is really meant to be sort of a gap coverage. There is a lot of children that are in care who have complex medical needs. And when I say that, you really have to understand that there's a scope. Each child's story is unique and different. So this runs the gamut from a child with ADHD or on the autism spectrum who maybe has sensory needs, all the way to a child who is in a wheelchair. And so, for example, a child who's in the wheelchair may be provided a wheelchair by state insurance, but they may not necessarily be given the car seat that is put into a vehicle that has the swivel base, which is very expensive, or
a
ramp.
Sometimes even as much as $800. And Ooh. So our foster parents can't. I mean, not that they don't want to, but they just can't afford it. And so that's where we can jump in.
Yeah, it's about being there when there is nobody else there. So that's one thing that we really like to tout at Embrace that we do, is that we will step up when there is nobody else to help and provide resources. And that's what this HALO program really is meant to do. It's supposed to be there to provide assistance, to get the ramp, to get the wheelchair in the house when there is nobody else to do that.
I know, I got pretty excited when I heard that, you know, at the event, and I could, you know, feel like the energy of the room, like, what? We can help here too? Mm-hmm. Like, people really want to be engaged and embraced. Like, I imagine your volunteers, your supporters, like, I guess we're all like, we're engaged in the outcomes of these kids. Where's that from?
Well, that's really wonderful to hear. You know, when you start a nonprofit from Acorn, which we did out of the back of my car, actually. And
what kind of car?
Oh, I can't even remember now.
Exactly, because it doesn't matter.
No. It was a convertible. I do know that, because I would sit downtown with my computer in front of a food wagon and munch on a burrito and use my computer and wait for appointments to ask people to invest in us. But
I love that.
But as we moved along, with each and every year, we saw needs. And needs that nobody could fill. And it wasn't that people didn't want to. It wasn't that the Department of Children the social workers didn't want to. There just wasn't funds. And so what we realized very, very quickly was that there was a need for Embrace. And then with each and every year, we saw more and more examples of that need. And so that's how we built Embrace. But we have done everything from providing like wheelchairs, and then how we really started out was to provide money for sports. And
okay, like, and someone wanted to be a part of a team.
Ballet.
It's expensive, right?
It is. Oh, it's very expensive. And is more and more expensive. And or ballet, or we paid for somebody to do clogging, dancing. I mean, everything you can imagine, art, everything. If a kid has a desire, we want to make that happen. But
and it was you and Kevin Parker were the founders? Was anyone else involved in that core?
Yes, there were three of us. It was Kevin's idea. I always like to make sure he gets credit. And there was the social worker, Shannon Bonavis, who no longer lives in Spokane. But she is involved with Catholic Charities, so she comes here quite regularly.
Nice.
And
we love Catholic Charities at Skelskin. Yes. We're working a big project right now to like pull the low-income housing world and the employment side of things together.
Well,
right
you
now.
May meet her because she's very involved at that level.
Nice. At the national level?
No, here in Spokane.
Can't wait to meet her.
Yeah.
She's the director of Margaret's House. But also, she does a lot of homeless stuff. So anyway, and Shannon may kill me after I've given her. But anyway, the three of us, we started it, and Kevin had a political career at that time and was building Dutch Bros. So pretty quickly, it landed on the two of us. But I quit my job at the community college to just start Embrace. So it was pretty much in my ballpark for quite a while. And but with each and every day, we realized that there just was a need. And our very first need we ever covered came at 3 a.m. in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it was a pair of band shoes for a kid size 14 foot.
You're like, how are we going to do this?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Out at Central Valley. Mm-hmm. And the foster mom had emailed me. And I don't even know how that came about because I don't even think... Like maybe we had an email at that time. We didn't even have a bank account at that time, I can tell you. And she said, is there any way you can help us? And we had no money. We had nothing. So I just said to my husband over coffee, here's the deal. This is the beginning. And we got a pair of band shoes. And he went on to go to Eastern and march in their band after he graduated. And he was the senior that year. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. And that was our first one.
First one and impact.
Yeah.
Something simple as a pair of shoes, something I might take for granted, mm-hmm. but has so much impact on these kids.
Right. And he couldn't march in the band without those shoes.
I love that. There we are. And then it just grew from there. It's like just celebrating 10 years.
Yes, this year. Yes.
Congratulations.
Going to have a birthday party.
Yeah.
And we think October.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, that's incredible. Like, it's a huge milestone in the nonprofit world. Because I'm sure you know, like, so many do not last that long.
I know. Yeah. When we got to 5 years, we were like, oh my gosh. And then now that we're at 10 years, and then we have this lovely lady who's our new ED who's going to take us over the top.
Well, and yeah, I'm starting to like see where the new needs are, how those evolve over time. We're just talking about the HALO program and, you know, working into the medical world. For those of the listeners who don't know about Embrace and, you know, all the things you do, we know it, you know, we're working with foster kids and their families.
That's correct.
How does that happen? How do people engage?
Well, there's a lot of ways that people engage. We are very lucky that we have a very collaborative relationship with DCYF. We love our social workers. And so it's sort of a multifaceted approach. We either hear about families, and we don't just do foster families. So let me give you some quick definitions.
Thank you.
Also, education time. Kinship families. So kinship family is when a blood relative takes in a child.
Okay.
So
and that happens all the time, right?
It does. Yeah. They will, before, you know, the state is shifting and trying to place children with family members. There's obviously a lot of studies that statistically say that the outcomes are better for kids if it is a relative that they're with. So, for example, we have grandparents that are, you know, on Social Security that are, you know, in their 70s who are taking
in their 80s.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Even really, I mean, really, truly taking in grandchildren.
They need some
great grandchildren. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. They do need support. So that is what a kinship family is. And then foster care is obviously that's the very traditional understanding that people have of a child has been removed from the home for a variety of reasons and is placed with a licensed foster care family. And so we like to stay involved anytime there is a social worker attached to the child, because Embrace, we're really here for the children and at a larger scale, the entire foster care community as a whole. So the families that are attached. So that also means that if a child is reunified with a bio parent, a social worker will stay attached to that child for 6 months. So okay. we will provide resources during that time to try to, again, improve outcomes for these kids. So again, we work really closely with DCYF. We have this great collaboration with them. But the other way that people learn about Embrace is just word of mouth. Our foster parents are incredible. They talk to each other. They, share resources, share opportunities. And so that's another way that people find out about us. So, and then obviously wonderful podcasts like this, where we can really spread our message and tell people about the resources that we can help provide for them.
Well, you know, you're doing something good. I know the second time I ever heard about Embrace was a buddy of mine named David Mariner, who was connected to your organization, and his family had received services, and they ended up adopting some of their foster kids. And he just said how hard it was. Like, he kind of pulled the wool over and was like, okay, this is how it really looks. And I couldn't believe it. Sometimes, you know, just the journey when people are trying to help, and some kids will, you know, maybe go back to, you know, the bio families for a while and then come back into care, and just people need some support. So I'm just, he told me it's like without organizations like Embrace, like he would have lost his mind. I think that was his exact words. So
we honor our social workers too. So like last month was Social Worker Month, and we have three offices in Spokane. And so we provided a treat, about 100 folks per office, and we provided treats for them during that month. And we like to support our adopted families. Sometimes we can even include them in our activities. if we win the lottery, which we keep trying, then we hope.
Or Mackenzie Scott, are you listening?
Right, yeah. Yes.
Embrace.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I missed out on that last grant cycle that just hit, unfortunately.
But we'd like to, we would love to extend our services to adoptive families for the first year or 2 years. And so if we ever make it big, that's in the plan.
I love that dream. It's just to be able to help. So what are some of the numbers? Like, how many people do you serve in any given year?
Well, it's pretty close to about 1,500 children per year.
That's
now,
a lot.
Again, it's those numbers are ever changing. So the amount of kids, well, first of all, let's define our region that
sure.
we support children. So Embrace supports children in 13 counties in eastern Washington.
So we're talking like everything east of the Cascades?
Mm-hmm. Essentially, yes. Oh. So it is, we use it as defined by DCYF. They have a map, and we are what's called Region 1.
Okay.
So again, Region 1 is 13 counties, and it is pretty much as you described it. If you were to just cut the state in half, and we're the eastern Washington
side. That's a lot of miles.
It's a lot of need too. It's unfortunate, and as you can imagine, the numbers constantly change because there is a transitory nature to children in care, right? Some are going between different foster homes. Some are going back to families. Some are being moved around based on special needs that they have. So it's the numbers are ever changing, and there's unfortunately always new children being added into the system. So it really depends. But one of the things that we do that where we get a large portion of the numbers is Santa breakfast, which we love. Every year at Christmas, we provide Christmas presents to about 600 children here locally.
Whoa.
And people drive in from Moses Lake. It's absolutely fantastic. And when I say presents, it isn't just about the kids getting a gift, which it is a little bit about that. And I will just say that the things that come out of these kids' mouths when you're at the Santa breakfast, it will lift your spirits and also simultaneously break your heart. We had some kids...
Tell me a story.
Well, I had a kid last year, so... There's five stations at Santa Breakfast, right? The kids get to get a present, they get to get a book, they get to get a stuffed animal, they get to get pictures with Santa Claus, and then we have an adult gift room where the child gets to get taken back by a helper and pick out a gift for any adult in their life, whether that's the social worker, foster parent, maybe the bio parent, maybe their teacher, just whoever they want so that they can feel participatory in Christmas, right? But you'll hear these kids say stuff like, I was finally good enough to meet Santa this year.
Aww.
Or this is the first time I've ever received a present. So it will devastate you a little bit hearing these kids' stories, because again, the trauma that is ingrained, you know, children don't end up in foster care because it's a lovely story, you know, and it doesn't matter if it's a situation where perhaps both of their parents were, you know, in a vehicle accident, all the way through it's a drug and domestic violence situation. I mean, it really, each story is unique.
I've never put that together. That makes sense. Yeah, it's like, it's not a good story.
No.
That's our start.
Our Santa breakfast is 22 years old.
That's a good story.
That is, yeah.
Started by Junior League. And we've been out at Northern Quest, what did we figure out? At least most of that time.
Yeah.
I think we were maybe one of the very first organizations to go out there, nonprofits, to have their event out there. And our Santa Claus has been with us for 18 years.
Wow.
I think he started when he was 12, because he still looks pretty still looks pretty young. And
good job, Santa.
Yeah. And this, our Santa Breakfast is a huge community effort. I mean, we have all kinds of people who collect books. All our gifts are brand new. All our gifts are age appropriate, gender appropriate, and ethnic appropriate. So we have, like, Waffles Plus collects books. And we have credit unions that do stuffed animals. And so we
was Dale Westhaver part of that at Waffles Plus, like prior to the new owners?
No, Dolly's.
Okay.
Dolly's was.
Copy.
And, yeah. So Travis and Gabe have been with us since the beginning. He likes
Those are
to
good
say,
people.
Yes. They like to say that Embrace was born at Dolly's with coffee and pancakes. But and that's pretty close to the truth. Yeah, it's a huge community effort. We couldn't do it without it. And the families are all eligible to win family baskets. Why don't you talk about the family baskets?
So the average foster family has anywhere between 8 to 10 people in it. When you say foster family, it's a mix in most cases. There may be biological children. There may be children that they've adopted out of foster care. There may be new foster children or children that they've had in foster care for a few years. It really depends, but it is large. Each and every one just about as large. There is some that will only have one or two. And again, it's
what's that about? Like, people just like help maybe start helping with one kid and then just like, hey, I want to help more.
That's
fair?
Yes, they really truly are. Foster parents are absolute angels. And it's, you know, there's a huge need for foster parents, including we're doing foster parent recruitment parties, because it is a big ask. You know, I mean, you're asking a family to make a decision to fundamentally change what their family looks like forever. You know, especially if they already have children in the house, or even if they don't, but it is a huge dynamic change. So it's a big lift to convince people. But once people get in, you hear very commonly, like, oh, I'll try it once or twice. And the next thing you know, they're on their fifth or 10th or, you know, child that they have brought in and taken care of. So
that sure sounded like the story that was told at the fundraiser too. It's like that gentleman and him and his wife, and taking like the really, you know, folks who had a medical necessity. It's like, man, that was tough.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we're just going to raise our hands and keep going.
I have foster parents who I go to their adoption and they say, we're going to close. And Terry's been part of this as well. Now we're going to close our license. And I go, uh-huh. Yeah. And then all of a sudden there's a phone call from the mom or the dad saying, we need a crib. We've decided not to take teens. We're going to take a babe. Oh. Or we need a bunk bed because we're not going to take babies anymore. And two are arriving from Sally's house tomorrow. And so I always have to laugh because a lot of our families say it and then they're right back there doing that because they hear the call. Mm-hmm. They see the need.
Well, I can see why, you know, you would devote a decade of your life to this.
Or longer.
Yeah.
We have a mother's retreat, a foster mom retreat, where we bring foster moms to a campground and we spoil the heck out of them.
Yep.
For 3 days. And who What was the largest number?
So we had, we took a head count with the ladies. We had 53 women at the last one, and we asked them, how many kids have you taken in? So again, there's a spectrum here. Some of these moms have only been doing foster care for a year or two. Sure. Some of them have been doing it for a decade. Those 53 moms had taken in over 1,100 children.
Wow.
In that year, in our, our retreat is in October, so the whole year hadn't been done yet. And we have foster moms who have taken in several hundred children. Well,
what does this need really look like then? Like, how many foster kids are there in the in Region 1?
Well, right now, I'm going to do Spokane County first, because the rural regions don't have as many kids.
Sure, so, yeah, just not as many people.
So anywhere from 800 to 1,000 children at any one time in Spokane County.
That's a lot of kids.
Yeah, yeah. And then as far as how many families we have, that varies too. A lot of families left through COVID. And so what has happened is we don't have as many families. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're going to get into the foster parent recruitment arena, because the state is trying to do it, but with very limited personnel. So,
well,
and it's
a yeah, new. And that's such a personal thing, I imagine, to like get people to understand what it really looks like to be transparent and to get them excited. I bet there's some listeners right now who are thinking about this. Like, what's the pitch?
Ooh, it's a big ask, as I said. So one of the things that we like to do is allow them the opportunity to talk to other foster parents, because who's better to answer their questions than somebody who has really truly been in the trenches, so to speak. So, you know, again, there's different licensures and different types of foster families, right? So, for example, the one that you mentioned, the Myers family, who spoke at our ball, they take in children that are medically complex and that have a variety of medical needs. And so maybe that isn't what every person is willing to sign up for example. And so maybe some only want babies. Maybe some want sibling groups. Maybe some are willing to do teenagers. It just really kind of depends. And we have to have the families have the availability to say yes or no. Because essentially what happens is they get a call from the state and say, hey, we have a child, children, plural, you know, can you take them? And so we're there to step in that case. And so it's a big ask. You know, I mean, it really truly is. You have to be willing on a day by day basis to get that phone call and to step up. So that's something that, again, I think it's very meaningful to hear from people who have done it and done it time and time again to answer those questions. And they'll tell you, each and every one of them, they don't mince words. You know, they talk about it is difficult, but it is a labor of love. I mean, these families are absolute heaven sent, and we're so grateful that they're there to provide for these children who so desperately need it.
We get asked all the time from people, well, what about the bio siblings? Does it really affect them? Well, yes, but in many cases, not in every case, but in many cases, it's a positive experience. And with the folks that spoke at the ball, they have done medically fragile children for 5 years now and have quite a few kids under their belt. And two of their kiddos are preparing for med school. So,
what?
Yes. So in many...
Well, that's success. Hot dang.
Yeah. So in many cases, it's really beneficial. We have some wonderful families who have three or four adopted and the rest are bio, and they're still very large. And we did an interview a number of years ago and talked to those kids before COVID. And each and every one talked about the hard, but they also talked about the good.
Yeah.
And how their hearts were broken as well when the kids moved on. And
I'd be one of them for sure.
Yeah. Like, yeah. But you know, our hearts are meant to be broken and are mended easily.
True.
After a while. So that can't be a barrier to wanting to be a foster parent and help some of these kiddos.
Wonderful point. And off camera, we were kind of talking about success a little bit. And you said one of the attributes that really resonated with me was, you know, if these kids have grit, mm-hmm. like you can feel like they're going to have, you know, a better outcome. They're going to be able to really just be stars in their life. is there a way that we can help teach grit, or is that innate?
Well, there's so much research being done about it right now, and I think that's the big question. Because, there's a really old study out there where there were two people, and they were both raised in foster homes, but one was raised by some good foster parents, and one was raised by in and out of many, many homes. And the one who was in and out of many, many homes became a federal judge. And the one that was in a good foster family and who did relatively well but did not end up in the same situation and then actually did break some laws and ended up in jail. What caused that? Because when we talk about, you know, grit and we talk about what helps, I can't tell you how many times I've been asked in this 10 years, and even when I was working in the school system with the children in foster care, I was asked so many times, what makes one child different from another? One child succeed? Heck if I know. Genes, I think, are part of it. But so I think the jury is still out.
That's cool that we're researching this, though. Yeah. It's like, and if there's a way, like,
right,
we can start working in that direction.
Right. And wouldn't we all love a little bit of that grit?
Yeah. Can you teach me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Why did you get into this world, Terry?
Oh, my goodness. So I've got a couple of answers to that question. So first of all, I have a sister who became a foster parent. Initially, they were just doing respite, which respite care is basically you take in other foster children from other foster families for a short time just to, you know, maybe the family has a vacation or they need a break. And so it's just for a few days at a time. And they started doing that. And then they moved on to actually having foster kids themselves. And they have since gone on to adopt my two incredible nephews, what? Sean and Calder. And I just love them. Mm. And having that personal touch and seeing how beneficial it is and how it has made an immediate impact and forever changed my family. And these boys are just wonderful. And I couldn't imagine our family without them. So that for me really gave me a heart for foster care and the foster care community. But I interned at Embrace in grad school, and I got to see firsthand the work in the community and the stories and the impact and what it has on the lives of these kids. And, you know, there's something that I like to tell people when they ask about, you know, why foster care? Why these kids? You know, because you can't spin in a circle without hitting a need in this,
sure,
in this community and just, you know, globally, right? But specific to children in care, you know, the outcomes for these kids are pretty devastating. 60% of men who are in federal prison systems were former foster kids.
60%.
Yes. So more than half of the men who are in federal custody right now were former foster kids.
And that number's mind-blowing.
Isn't
wow.
it? It's pretty
So if
horrific.
We can be really good at, like, helping foster kids, we actually can really impact
exactly.
even, you know, later and even how many people are in jail. That's amazing.
Right.
This work is important.
It is. And it's for the women as they age out, it's about the same number are sexually trafficked. Sexually trafficked victims in the United States, an overwhelming majority are former foster girls. So, you know, I always try to frame it to people that, you know, as a society, one way or another, we're going to be impacting and having to deal with these individuals. So wouldn't it be better to influence their lives and change their trajectory and make it positive as a child when they have a little bit more of opportunity and chance than having, you know, some adults that have all this trauma and, you know, thing that's just kind of baked in at that point. So
absolutely. They deserve strong organizations to come and help, and Embrace gets to be a part of that. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Lean, you're famous on this show, by the way. Your name's come up multiple times in some of our guests.
Oh.
And just most recently, Molly Allen mentioned you around Safety Net and some of the impact that you had, you know, working with that organization. I don't know your whole story, but I imagine you've had your hands, you know, helping people for a long time. Where does that come from? Like, where does that heart for service come from for you?
Well, I don't know exactly. I do know that I was a teacher in an inner city school, and I saw foster care when I was like in my 20s. And then as I climbed the ladder educationally and became an administrator, and then I ran a juvenile correction facility in Idaho.
What?
And I'd say about 70% of our kids were in and out of care, especially the ones who came back and back. And so, and I honestly, when I was a vice principal, didn't like kids in care at all because they were always in my office.
Right, you were the one.
Yeah. And also the social workers that came with them. And so I always have to laugh, you know, God's pretty tricky and those kind of things. And so here I am serving that community all these years. As I look back, I think teaching kids who'd been in care to start out with and then working with them, the teenagers, and seeing how they ended up in incarceration, and at 18 marched up the hill to the grown-up jail, all those things impacted. And when I just always want to say thank you to Kevin Parker for having this idea. There is an Embrace Texas and Embrace Oregon is how he learned about it and wanting to bring it to Spokane. And then I fell into a path with him. And I do have to say that just seeing the need is just, we're all so fortunate, more fortunate than we think. But if you look at children who are having family problems, nobody chooses to be in foster care.
That's right.
That child being born at Sacred Heart today, who is going to be drug addicted,
uh-huh,
and is going to need help right away, and there's Maddie's house is there, and then we're there, and all kinds of new nonprofits coming into Spokane. But that child doesn't choose to be in foster care. Nobody dances into foster care.
Yes.
And so knowing that and knowing the helplessness that causes and having known so many kids in foster care, and I'm still very much tied to about 10 kids who I've been at their weddings, I've been at their births, I've seen them buy houses. But they were, in fact, 5 of them were at my house for dinner last weekend. They were talking about themselves and about time and care and how they were scared to death of me when they attended high school and college. But seeing them now and listening to them, and if we don't step up and help these children, then they'll be in prison, and that's a whole nother ball game. And so that's the need, and that's what drives us. And just today, I am working with Safety Net. Just right today, we have a family of a couple of kids and a mom who she's worked her program. They've got her housing, but no furniture. We really can't help with the furniture or help mom buy a bed, but we will buy the beds and the bedding and the furniture for the kids' rooms. So all I did is call Colleen Quisenberry. And
like, here
so
we go.
Here we go, yes. And so it's such a wonderful partnership we have with them.
Well, speaking of help, I don't know. I go to many events. We've learned a ton about a lot of nonprofits right on the show. Just a lot of impact and ton of amazing missions. People, like, a lot of it touches my heart. But your organization, for me, there's just something special about it. And
thank you.
Well, thank you for, you know, helping our community. And these kids need help. And I know I'm not the only one. I know our listeners are probably like, how do I help now? Terry, how does someone get involved?
Oh, there's so many ways. First of all, open your checkbook.
Money talks.
Really, truly. That's one thing that I'm very proud of at Embrace is that we get to tout that 89 cents of every dollar goes directly back into these kids.
That's huge. 11% overhead. That's great.
Yeah, we you know, maintain a small staff and small output on purpose. You know, it is very intentional because we're here for the kids. So, you know, I myself have to essentially be a jack of all trades. You know, I'm doing all of the grant writing, doing the event planning, you know, managing. Writing thank you cards to attendees of events, you know, and, you know, Aline's helping processing wishes. And, you know, I mean, we really, truly try to have every dollar be minded well, and we're good stewards of the finances that come to the organization. So, you know, again, we cannot run these programs that we do without the help and assistance of donors. You know, we do not accept state or federal funding. And that is, again, also very intentional. You know, we want to make sure that we don't have that kind of oversight, just in terms of we have the ability to act.
Yeah.
So when we get a phone call like the one we got today saying, hey, we have a child that needs a bed. It has to happen in 2 hours. Can you make it happen? Otherwise, this kid's going to end up in a group home overnight. We're able to do that. We have that flexibility and leeway because we don't accept that state and federal funding. So again, grants and donors is the biggest way, but there's so many different ways in which you can get involved. I mean, really, truly, we have some great programs. We have one that's called Duffels for Darlings. So that one is a little bit close to all our hearts. So when children enter the system, they're usually given a black garbage bag. I'm sure that people have heard that narrative before, you know, to gather their belongings up. We make sure that DCYF has access to duffel bags. And so families and groups will purchase duffel bags, and then we have painting parties.
There's dignity in that.
Yes. It is. You can imagine the what that would do and impact on your confidence that all of your belongings go in a garbage bag. Like, what is that going to, you know, tell you about yourself and how you should feel about yourself? And so these children are given these duffel bags that are hand painted. And I mean, it's the people that run our program. So Beth Childs, I want to give a shout out to her. She helps do the paint. She hosts the painting party.
Yeah,
and teaches
Beth.
People how to paint these duffels. Because like I, for one, have zero artistic talent. But they
I got smiley
these,
faces. I can do that
right?
pretty good.
They make these incredible painted duffel bags, and they all have a letter of hope that is given to the child. And so, you know, we've got families that will do it at Christmas. They'll say, our whole family wants to everyone make a duffel that goes in. We also just have constant need. So you can always reach out and say, hey, you know, we want to help and volunteer at Santa Breakfast. You know, there's always something cooking. And if you have any questions, feel free to go to our website, or you can email us at info@embracewa.org, or just give us a call. But really, truly, Google foster care and we will pop up. I mean, there's always something that you can do. So I think that one thing that's incredible about Spokane and the surrounding communities is there are a lot of giving hearts, and they just don't know how to get involved. They want to get involved. There's always a way that you can be involved, and it doesn't have to always be financially. You can really, truly give and be a donor of your time, of your knowledge, and there's going to always be a need to be filled. And we're happy to inform everyone and talk to them and have one-on-one conversations to see what that means for them.
Well, you heard it here. Everybody, look these folks up. These ladies are kicking butt, making impact. This organization is helping change our community. Want to thank you both for joining us today. Just been an awesome episode. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having us. Yes.